you love movies? Well, they love movies so much, it's a little bit disturbing. It's the Screaming Boy Podcast. Ronnie and Adam bring you news and reviews of new releases and classics. Now, here are the guys.
All right, then, I guess we'll go ahead and get into the documentary diary. 16 Photographs at Ordruff. Okay, documentary by Matthew Nash.
Okay.
He's the producer, director, and writer of this particular documentary. So let's break the ice a little bit while you cover up your yawn there. Say you're not sleepy.
I said sleepy.
Then I got to thinking about my pillow, and next thing you know, I'm yawning. Let me ask you real quick, Ronnie. Have you ever think about going into the military?
I did at one point for about 5 minutes.
Minutes. Were you serious? It was a quick decision. Minutes,
but yeah, it was. My dad was a military guy.
Oh, okay.
And he was in the Navy. My dad was in the military, in the Navy. My grandfather, his father, was in the Army, and his brother, my dad's brother, my uncle, was in the Army as well. So I was like, you know, I could carry on that tradition. My dad looked at me and said, "Son, I'd rather you go to college." He had nothing against the military or anything like that. He enjoyed his experience there, I'm sure, getting to see all these different places, because every time that we would mention going to a different country, you know, "I'd really like to see Spain." "Oh, I've been there." "When did you go there?" "Oh, I was in the Navy." "Well, I'd like to go see Italy." "Oh, I've seen Italy. It's really nice." "Well, what the crap, Dad?" He doesn't talk a whole lot about it because it was a time of his life that, you know, it's over with. Yeah, you know, he'll tell me a little bit about it. He showed me some posters and trinkets and stuff like that. He has a bullfight poster from Spain, things like that. And I think it was early 70s. It was almost Vietnam era that he was in. He was in the Navy. "I would rather you go to college." "So I went on to college." I'll see movies like I just recently saw 13 Hours, things like Black Hawk Down and things like that. And I'm like, could I ever have done what these guys did? Now, I know 13 Hours, they were paramilitary. They were PMC, private military contractors. And, you know, but they also had their time in the Navy SEALs and the Army and things like that. Was I built for stuff like that, to see combat, to go through the training that they went through? And you know, shoot, I can't even stay to a workout regimen for very long. Try to get in shape and whatever. I have thoughts of, I would have liked to have gone to the military. Of course, there's always that, for me, an urge to say, yes, I did that. Yes, I went there. But, you know, I have other things in my life that have taken that place that, if I'd gone to the military, I couldn't have gotten to do this and that. But, you know, there was a time in my past, you know, for a short while, let's say 5 minutes, but it was longer than that. I kind of did want to go in the military.
Yeah. Okay, so I asked you talked about your dad.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a period of time that your dad didn't talk a whole lot about, you know, with him being in the military, you said, right?
Right.
Okay. So that's very similar to this particular documentary.
Mm-hmm.
16 Photographs of Ordruff. Do you recognize the name Ordruff at all?
I do, but I don't want to sound too, I don't want to get it
wrong. Okay.
Yeah.
All right, that's fine.
But that's it was a concentration camp, right?
That's right. This was the first time I'd ever even heard of what Ordruff. I've ever even heard that name. I'm not a history buff. I enjoy I enjoy learning about history. Don't get me wrong. You know, I'm not the guy who goes and watches historical documentaries on History Channel or anything like that.
Without looking it up, can I kind of guess?
I'll, if
I'm wrong, was it the first one that was overtaken by U.S. troops?
You're absolutely correct. So April 4th, 1945, there was a platoon that liberated a concentration camp, and it was the first concentration camp that was liberated in World War II. Okay, this story is about this man by the name, it's Matthew Nash, the writer, director, and producer of this documentary. As a kid growing up, he knew that his grandpa served in the military.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it was in 1995, He's a young kid, like 16 years old or something. I think his grandpa passes away. His grandfather passes away. While he's at the house, maybe it was younger than that, and I hate misquoting myself and misquoting the movie, but I know at one point in his life, he was at his grandfather's house. He's messing around somewhere, and he finds these pictures. They're pictures of some very, very frightening stuff. So much so that, you know, they look at them, and they go get their grandma and say, hey, take a look at these. What are these about? The grandma looks at them, turns them over, sees the date on them, and immediately puts them away. Says, no, that's bad stuff. We don't want you to look at this. This is horrible. Immediately gets the kids out of there and tucks and hides the pictures away. So years pass, and I believe his grandfather passes away. And they decide that they are going to... He remembers those photos. And so he makes it a mission to try and find out what this was about. He knew his grandfather had served in the military, but he didn't know what these photos were about. He then decided, okay, well, I'm going to make a documentary about it. So he goes, grabs the camera, and he goes over to his grandmother's. And throughout this whole process, what he's trying to do is find out more about his grandfather and his time served, that is, the time that his grandfather served in the military. Because he didn't know much anything about it. It wasn't really shared a whole lot. And also, when he gets his hands on these pictures, he wants to find out the story about these pictures. He embarks on doing the documentary, doing research, all this stuff to try and find out what was going on. Gets the pictures. Reluctantly, his grandmother, you know, gives the pictures, but still she doesn't talk too much about them. So during this period of time, this was almost like a documentary about making the documentary, if you can put it that way. Because he talks a lot about what he has to do and the kind of research that he has to do and the people that he has to talk to. He's very, reticent about having to dive into this whole subject matter, because what he finds sure. out is that the photos are of a concentration camp. I think he knows that they're from Ordruff at that point in time. So he's trying to find out, number one, what part of the military that his grandfather was in, the regiment or the company that he was in, and what journey he took that led him to Ordruff to take those pictures. What were the series of events? So he's just kind of working backwards, trying to figure out the series of events that led his grandfather to that particular place at that particular time.
Mm-hmm.
So he begins his journey about research. And like I said, he's not looking forward to the fact that he has to just dive in and start learning all this stuff about the Holocaust. It's not a pretty subject at all. There are some facts that were brought up in the documentary. This is something that I told you. I think this might be one of those documentaries that are going to be kind of rough to get through. I just go ahead and let everybody know right up front, you know, this wasn't something that they hit you with a bunch of imagery of what was going on, which is kind of good. Like I said, this was more about his journey into finding out who, what, when, and where of his grandpa. There are some images, don't get me wrong, there are some pretty disturbing images, because we do get to see the photographs that were taken. And I'm not going to go through all 16, but I'll tell you some of the stuff that was in there for sure. But there are some facts that I learned about the Holocaust. Now, me and you know the short form of what the Holocaust was, which is pretty much the Germans. You know, we said the phrase concentration camp. The Germans were putting all these Jews into concentration camps, making them work, and basically making them work or just keeping them there all in one spot, or leading them to their deaths by either gas chambers or shooting them, stuff like that. Horrific stuff. There is a fact that they brought up, I made sure to write down. Okay? There's actually this museum that is doing a catalog of all the concentration camps that Nazi Germany had. And I think what he said was at the beginning, when they started their research, this museum started their research, and they were going to, I think it was called the Encyclopedia.
Yeah. Okay.
Encyclopedia to concentration camps and sites of Nazi Germany. Their job was to go out, this museum's job was to go out and catalog all these places, review them. You'd have a book that would basically have, okay, this place at this time had this many prisoners in it, Something similar to that. So you'd have a, you know, you have basically a listing of everybody. They were told that there was going to be 7,000 of these in the beginning.
Oh, jeez.
At the end of things, after further research and 10 years, I think they said 10 years into it, maybe it was a different number, they now have 30,000 sites of concentration camps, and they mentioned the word ghetto. I don't know much about the Holocaust. I've read a few things about it, but I understand, you know, they would just move the Jews wherever they wanted.
Yeah, yeah.
So 30,000 of these at the time of this documentary have been found, and they have to, they're still working on putting this encyclopedia together at this museum. The other thing that was really staggering was they talked about this fact. Me and you, we went through September 11th. We've lived through that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. 3,000, close to 3,000 people died on that day. All right. Horrific number, a lot of people. There was a section over there in Germany, I believe, called the Bloodlands. They had a 9/11 every single day from 1933 to 1945. Imagine that, man.
I'd rather not.
That is an amazing, staggering amount of people being killed. Just a sad, sad state of affairs. I mean, just horrific. He starts tracing, you know, his grandfather's steps. He finds this one regimen that he believes his grandfather was part of and starts interviewing the people in that. You know, there's not too many people around from World War II anymore. They're a little up there in age. So he's lucky to find some people when he starts talking to them. And they talk about this these camps that the United States and their allies had that they would go to and stay, okay? So these sites that they would go to in order to hang out with the rest of the infantrymen and get ready to invade or get ready to liberate the rest of Germany or wherever they're at. France, I have no idea. Anyway, these camps were named, like, after cigarette packs. Pall Mall, Lucky Strike. So they would call these, they would call their, where they were staying at, these different cigarette pack names. But they had talked about Lucky Strike was like one of the worst stations for them to be at. It was horrible. It was mud everywhere. And one guy talks about how he goes up to the, when they walked up there, there were cots for the men to lay on. I mean, they had to march all the way up there, and they're exhausted. And I think one guy was saying it was like 9 inches of snow they had to march through.
Jeez.
Just imagine that.
Yeah.
They finally get to their destination, Camp Lucky Strike, and there's cots laid out. It's snowing. There's no tents. They have to lay on these cots. That's where they're going to sleep, is outside in the snow. People would lay on these cots and cover themselves up real well. They'd wake up with frostbite on their back. Because,
oh my gosh.
Because their front was covered just fine, but their back was, you know, to the ground.
Yeah.
And practically just laying there. So there was snow all over the place, no tents, just a horrible, horrible camp for the servicemen. So shortly after this, you know, as this guy's doing this research, he gets a call from his mom. His mom found a newspaper clipping, okay? He's like, oh, great. Turns out his grandfather was in a completely different division than what he's been researching for the past year. Imagine that, Ronnie. You're a filmmaker. You just invested a year to a year and a half in making this film, and you've been researching the wrong stuff the whole time.
No. Oh, jeez.
A year and a half goes by, and his mom's like, oh, yeah, those people you interviewed, they weren't in the right regimen that your grandpa was in. So this guy has, it's so, you know, you can tell he's just defeated because he gets on camera and he's like, well, I just got a call from my mom. And he has to then kind of almost start from scratch. The movie continues. When he finally gets to the point where his grandfather and the rest of the company found Ohrdruf, it really drove home for those that this was the first concentration. They had no idea this stuff was going on over there. There were rumors, but nobody had ever seen anything, okay? And this company comes into that camp, and all of a sudden, they start seeing all this horrible imagery laying there in front of them. All these rumors had, you know, somewhat been proved true now. The soldiers were, number one, I mean, the soldiers were in shock when they saw all this. You know, there's piles of dead bodies. They had to take this concentration camp, by the way, but the Germans knew that the Americans were coming, so they bolted and got out of there, except they left like one or two people to kind of maybe shoot towards the Americans that were coming at the camp. I think there was like a couple volleys of fire, and then that was it. Then the Americans just kind of walked in to the camp, and they saw everybody. Now, there were people still living. There were many that were dead, just basically starved to death, practically. They had some great interviews from people that served in the company that his grandfather did, and from some of the other interviews, you know, from the other companies that were serving over there. They also talked to a Jewish prisoner from one of them concentration camps. He showed the tattoo of the number, you know, they put on him. He told the story about how he was at Ordruff. He was a young kid. Now, from Ordruff was not one of the concentration camps where you went to die. There were concentration camps that were well known as death camps, where they took you to die. Okay, you were going to die. You were going to get gassed, shot, whatever. You were going to get murdered by the Nazis. Ordruff was not one of those places. Ordruff was
more of a work camp, wasn't it?
Yes, it was more of a work camp where they made you. They were hollowing out the side of a mountain for something, I believe. But well, these bodies that were there were just people that died from starvation or being worked too hard, being exhausted, exposure. And instead of burying them, they just tossed them in a pit. You know, it's unpleasant. Evil. Yeah, it is evil. It is. Anyway, the story that this prisoner tells is about how he was a kid. Before the Americans show up at Ordruff, the Germans march a bunch of them out of there, and they march them to one of the death camps. So this kid is being marched by these Germans, and I don't know if he knows he's going to die at that point in time. I think he does. So he's being marched that way, and they arrive at the camp, the death camp, and the doors open, and he says he could tell something was different. Something was off. And as he walks into the camp, they pretty much say the Americans are on their way, and the camp is going to be liberated. So he escaped death. Yeah. He escaped death within days, probably.
Jeez.
Just a very moving story told by that person.
I can't imagine. I cannot imagine the thoughts in your head. I mean, I don't know if they said anything about this, but we know that sometimes it's been, I guess, documented or whatever, that people that survive things like this, do they go through survivor's guilt?
Mm-hmm.
You know, why was he one of the ones that was chosen to live? You know, why did, you know, of all the, you know, thousands of people that have died before him at these camps, why did he go at that time?
He was a kid, too, and I think, you know, he said most of his family was killed.
Mm-hmm.
As a kid, I'm sure that the Nazis probably looked at him as like, okay, well, we can, I don't know how that all worked, but I'm certain that they probably took his parents from him first, and any other able-bodied person was put somewhere else. I mean, it seemed like they had intended on separating a lot of people in the first place. But anyway, he said most of his family was killed, and you're right. It would be a terrible thing to try and live with, to try and reconcile with that. You know, your family's gone, and you were. You know, you were days within joining them, pretty much.
Yeah,
I mean,
absolutely.
But you continued to live. It's a very scary thing to think about. Dude, we're talking, what, we're 70 years outside of that now? 70 years outside of World War II and all that. And you don't really hear too much about that specific type of environment out there during war. Now, I'm not saying it's not happening. I'm saying that, you know, and most likely, dude, before the Americans walked right into this camp, like I said, it was rumor. They didn't know that something like this was going on. The Americans weren't over there, you know, specifically knowing exactly what was going on during that time. So what they had said is when they went in there and saw that, I think it was Eisenhower, immediately was like, okay, I'm going there and looking at it myself. I want to see the evil that we're up against, and I want to use that to motivate our troops. You know, this is the evil of our enemy. Look at the lengths. Look at the lengths that they would go to. Just the despicableness of what these people are and why they need to be stopped. And he went over there and he took a bunch of men along with him to look at this camp, and including, you know, news agencies. They've got it on film, him walking around there and looking at each. They didn't touch anything. You know, they came into that camp and they were told, don't move anything, don't touch anything. We want this to be something that we see with our own eyes and that everybody else sees with their own eyes, so that they have a good idea of what it is they're up against. And that's kind of where it led off. I mean, or left off. His grandfather, you know, kind of chronicles his grandfather and how he gets to Ordruff. His grandfather is a medic, by the way.
Oh, wow.
He's got a camera and he just starts snapping some pictures. That's pretty much where the pictures came in. So could you imagine, dude? I mean,
not at all. No.
Your dad, you said he served in the Navy?
Navy, yeah.
Okay. Did he do any tours or anything like that?
I don't know that he saw any action. Mm-hmm. That's one of the things that I've never really, I really asked him, because it's one of those things that you don't, it's not that I'm uncomfortable. It's not that I don't think he would tell me. It's just one of those things I just never really asked him, because to me, that's not something that you ask.
It's not something you want to make somebody talk about.
Right, exactly. If they want to talk about it, they will. I don't know that he saw any, you know, real action or anything like that, but he's told me several stories, you know, training and things like that. He said he almost drowned once, like legitimately almost drowned. I'm like, holy crap, my dad almost drowned.
That's scary.
Yeah. Certain things like that, but I just, you know, I don't, you know, I know some people that, whose wives don't have a clue what they did. Uh-huh. You know, if they want to tell, they'll tell. And one guy who legitimately, I remember somebody telling somebody, speaking of their husband's time in the military, and he did a lot of things and might have been special forces. I can't remember in a certain time period. And I said, I was like, wow, I wonder what that was like. And she goes, well, I asked him once and he looked at me dead seriously, said, I could tell you, but I don't want to tell you, because it was, you know, it was one of those things. If I told him, I'd have to kill him.
Are you serious?
Yeah. Dude. So, you know, things like that. That to me, I was like, well, that's kind of when I made the point of saying, I will never ask about what kind of action. So, did you see any action over there? You know, it's a heck of a thing to serve and maybe even have to take somebody's life. You know, you don't want them to relive that. And so I can't imagine. I cannot imagine seeing the horrors that they saw while stationed there, while going through this.
Let's put you in the director's shoes.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. You're at your dad's house. You stumble across something in the study, knock over a book, and out pop 16 pictures of some crazy stuff that you've never seen before. You never heard your dad. You never heard your dad mention before. Do you pick those pictures up, just put them back in the book, go about your way, or do you embark upon a journey to try and figure out what exactly it's about?
There's a point where you look at something like that, and the pictures are there. You can ask about them.
Okay.
Hey, Dad, did you take these? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Do you want to tell me about them? No. Okay, right. I'll leave it alone.
Back in the book.
Back in the book they go. You know, is it something that you want to talk about? I don't think so.
So your answer is you would investigate, but you would...
I would ask general questions.
Okay, yeah, gotcha.
Yeah, I wouldn't prod and pry and poke, you know, what'd you see? What was it like? Blah, blah, blah. None of my business, you know? Uh-huh. It's not the fact that, you know, some people say, well, that's your father. Of course you can ask him. That's my dad or my grandpa or somebody. But they also saw some awful things,
yeah.
You know, and because they are my family, because I love them, I don't want them to relive that.
Mm-hmm. I didn't get into this, but I mean, I'm kind of the same way as you. I got my mom's side of the family, more military. My dad's side of the family, no way.
yeah.
But my mom's side of the family, my grandfather, Air Force. I got a cousin, Air Force, another cousin that's Navy. I can remember something similar to this kind of happening. Eh, not really. I mean, I was really, really young. But it did spur similar interest. I can remember going to my, we were at my grandfather's house. This is, I'm sure he was retired at this point in time. He had this briefcase. I was just sitting around.
Oh, wow.
You know, it was just a briefcase. You know, I was like, okay, what's in this? And I open it up, and there's a passport, and there's like, it's just a bunch of miscellaneous stuff thrown into this briefcase, but there's like money, like coins from other nations. Yeah, it's like, you know what? Grandpa's been around to a lot of different places. You know, so it kind of piqued my curiosity, but of course, I think I might have asked Mom, what's this? Where did this come from? Because I was just more, you know, more fascinated by the money. But my grandpa, just not too long ago, he came across all his plane logs. My grandpa, being in the Air Force, he did. I don't know if he did this while he was in the Air Force. I imagine he did, but he learned how to fly a plane.
Oh, wow.
So he's. I'm not talking about a jet or anything, though. I think it's just small aircraft.
Yeah.
But something that was really neat was he has, a while back, he was talking about how he had found all his logs from, like, his flight logs. So, you know, he was like, yeah, I took your grandmother up into the, you know, it was April whatever of 1963. We flew up to such and such, Ohio, and picked strawberries. And he, oh yeah, I've got my flight log right here. I mean, he's got these piles of papers. So going back and tracking somebody's, you know, a grandparent's life, I could definitely see where this filmmaker, you know, where his motivation came from. As for my overall thoughts of the documentary, it was a good flick. I mean, I learned a lot. I'm not a history buff. I'm not the guy who knows left and right about the Holocaust. Aside from some pretty staggering imagery, it's a good film showing that, you know, how a grandson took an interest in his grandfather's life.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's probably the best way to put it. All right, man. So that is entry four?
Three? No, we've done. I've got one in the can, two coming out.
I gotta get you.
Three re-recorded. This is four.
Okay. So this is the fourth entry. We're going to go to entry five here at some point. Entry five is going to be an interesting one. It is Hunt versus...
For Red October.
Hunt versus Lauda, 1976. The greatest rivalry.
Yes. Justin Ewing actually got involved in that on Facebook.
Yes, he did.
Basically saw a picture of... remind me of the gentleman's name.
Niki Lauda.
Niki Lauda, and just screamed, "It's a rat man."
Oh, man.
To which you replied, that was actually one of his nicknames.
As a matter of fact, dude, when they talked to him in the pits, okay, this is Formula One racing, by the way, folks. I have no interest in Formula One racing whatsoever.
Nobody has an interest in Formula One racing.
I'm kidding
all you Formula One fans.
I see these names. I have no idea who they are. But, of course, get into watching the documentary, and like I told you, I have no interest in the sport. This documentary was fantastic. Possibly one of the best ones that I've seen so far in the documentary diary. Anyway, Niki Lauda is a Formula One racer who was, in fact, everybody called him the rat. If you walked
that
up
blows
to Niki,
my mind. That
and
would
he
be
was,
insulting.
I thought so, too. He's an Austrian. Now, as to whether maybe it was lost, and I don't think it was lost in translation, but, you know, they would.
I wouldn't think so.
I wouldn't think so either, dude.
You said he was Austrian?
Austrian.
But he had to know some sort of, at least... rudimentary English.
He knew English.
And he knew what a rat was.
And these people, I mean, they talk about Hunt was the other guy, that you know, his rival or whatever. They were sort of friends, obviously, but they're both drivers. But, you know, people in the pits would just come up to him and be like, rat, so-and-so is going, you know, it's casual conversation. That's what they called him to his face. It was rat, because he looked like a rat. And I did not know... those other nicknames that Wikipedia talked about, like King Rat, Super Rat, or something like that. I had no idea it went to that extreme. But man, I'll tell you what, you said it was based off of The movie Rush.
Was based off of it.
Okay. Which I've not seen. Is that the...
Hemsworth.
Hemsworth. Okay. I was thinking the Stallone one.
What's the Stallone one? I think it's like Drive.
Drive.
That's an even worse one word name.
So, okay, the Hems... Okay, well, I have not seen Rush.
That is a Hemsworth movie.
Okay.
I've not seen all of it, but I have seen the...
What you saw?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Much better than Drive.
That's the first thing I thought of. Well, at least I didn't think it was Free Jack. How about that?
Wow.
So, anyway.
Where'd you pull Free Jack from, man? Come on.
Time travel, buddy. It's always right there at the top of the old brain. Okay, so yeah, next entry on the documentary diary. It's going to be Hunt versus Lauda. It's going to be the greatest rivalry, 1976 Formula One. We're going to be talking racing. It's going to be good stuff. So,
but anyway, plugs, you said.
For myself, you can follow me at Stiznarchy. I do run a show on the Rattlitchin Broadcasting Network called Source Material, where me and Ronnie usually get on there and cover some comics, talk with some guests. If you get a chance, go to the Rattlitchin Broadcasting Facebook page. Give that a like. You can stay up on top of all the great podcasts that they offer. You can also find us on iTunes and on Stitcher. Just search Rattlitchin and subscribe. You'll be subscribed to all the great podcasts that come out on the network, including this great network here, the Screaming Boy Productions movie podcast shows up on there every once in a while. So you guys,
every once in a while,
you guys check it out there and subscribe. And if you want to find the Source Material Twitter, it's at SourceMatCast. I do a sports show with Jason Teasley called From the Cheap Seats over there on the Rattlitchin Broadcasting Network also. Other than that, that's it for me.
You can always catch Screaming Boy Productions on Twitter at Screaming Boy PR, and we do Periscope every once in a while. I think I recently did a Periscope about Snowpocalypse 2016.
Yeah, that's right.
And my trip to Walmart out in it, and the desolation and craziness that happened in the bread aisle. I mean, that place was just pillaged.
Oh, wow.
And you can catch us on iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn, and the Radio Lichen Broadcasting Network. We just, as this is recorded this week, we released our Star Wars episode. So go back and give that a listen. It was a lot of fun. We had Josh Calanders on there. He's always a great guest. We had Teasley on there, who is always a great guest as well. And then we also released episode 1 of the documentary diary.
Oh,
so
yeah.
Please go back and give that a listen. And episode 2, as this is being recorded, I must tell you again, will be on the network as well. So we've got that out. You can also catch me. We just recently did the Wolverine.
Oh, Father, what a Wolverine Hit. Father. Yeah, that was a good one.
Yeah, we did that. And then we the one you just released. Was Superman for the Man Who Has Everything,
oh, yeah,
which is a phenomenal story. And that has our good friend Benjamin J. Colon,
yep,
who is also the artist and creator and writer of Soul Exes, his comic book. So wherever you can, please take a look for that as well. But I think that's about it.
You've been listening to the Screaming Boy Podcast. Find us on Twitter at Screaming Boy PR, Instagram Screaming Boy Productions, or check out our website www.screamingboy.com. We're out.